Everyone, and welcome to this Lunch and Learn webinar, Planning for Your CAS Audit. My name is Neve McConaughey and I'm the Marketing Executive at FSCom, and I am delighted to introduce you to our host for the session, Senior Manager in the Investment Team, Julie Tuffrey. Before I pass you on to Julie, I would just need to highlight some housekeeping. So everyone asks us during the session, is this session recorded? And yes, it is. It will be shared with you in a follow-up email and then will be on our website in the next couple of days. If you have any questions throughout the session, please put them into the question box available. Any questions not answered in the Q&A session, Julie will email you personally next week with any follow-up answers. Now, over to you, Julie, for the presentation.
Thank you very much, Neve, and welcome everyone to this FSCom webinar on preparing for your CAS audit. We're going to spend a little bit of time today just going through some of the topics that you can hopefully now see on your screens, covering off just a little bit of background to start with, and then I'll walk through some of the areas that are shown on the screen to give you some insight into what we're seeing through interaction with our clients in the CAS audit space, and hopefully help you to enhance your capabilities in these areas and get yourself audit ready. So just so for those of you who may not have come across FSCom before, a little bit of background information about us. We are a Belfast HQ'd consultancy practice established in 2011, and we also work across all of the regions, and we've offices in Dublin and London as well. We have quite deep experience in assisting firms across the regulatory spectrum, including CAS, but also all of the other areas that you may expect. And we work across the FCA, the PRA, and also the Central Bank of Ireland areas as well. So please get in touch if you need any help across any of the areas, but today we'll be focusing on the CAS regime. I don't intend to spend any time on this at all, but for those of you who may be interested in me, have not come across me before, there's a little snapshot of some experience for me and my LinkedIn profile. If you want to link in with me, please feel free. So planning for your CAS audit. Just as way of background, all regulated investment firms who hold or control client money and assets with the CAS permissions are required to have a CAS audit annually. And those audits are conducted by auditors in line with the FRC standards, Financial Reporting Councils. There's quite a detailed set of criteria and rules around how those are conducted. And ultimately, they result in the auditor producing for you a CAS audit report, which concludes whether you had maintained systems adequate to comply with the rules throughout the period, and importantly, at the end of the period, whether the firm was in compliance with those rules. These are completed on an annual basis, so themes tend to follow through from those audits from each report to the next, and hopefully you're seeing your capabilities go upwards in terms of a positive curve on that. But if you aren't and you need any assistance, we can certainly help you with those. So what does that mean in practice for you to be audit ready? I guess the first thing to say is audits are retrospective looking. So they're looking at the period that's gone. So the chance for you to be able to rectify and fix anything that's happened is unfortunately not there. But what you can do is make sure that you've correctly identified any issues or any incidents that have arisen, log them with evidence, and you have those available to be able to looked into, and also that you've remedied those situations. And when your auditors do come in, if things have happened, that you can show them exactly how you reacted, what you did, and how you've rectified the situation so that they've stopped. So turn the tap off, and then also that they don't happen again going forward. So that's the best place for you to be, is firm identified and that you've actually resolved and you've got the evidence around that to support that. So you're expected under CAS to comply to Principle 10 and provide adequate protection for client money and assets, but referred to as client assets in this respect, while you're responsible to them. So to do that, you need to have sort of demonstrated that you understand where CAS touches your organisation. So we call this your CAS footprint and touch points, and it's really important for the firm to be able to articulate that. So document from the legal entity level down where CAS arises, and all of the touch points across the customer journeys and the flow of money and assets that occurs, so that you can demonstrate to auditors or indeed any third party, the regulator, etc., exactly how CAS applies or doesn't apply within your organisation. And it's important to be able to demonstrate the rationale for why you've applied or disapplied particular rules. So there will be sections of CAS that apply and sections that maybe don't apply. But the rationale for why that's been set that way for your organisation is really important to be able to demonstrate. And the auditor will actually make an assessment of your skills and your ability to understand CAS within your organisation as part of the audit that they're undertaking. So skilled and CAS aware employees is really important, making sure your people are confident with CAS, and sort of being aware that you've got people across the organisation where CAS is not their first area of expertise or not particularly the job's area of expertise, but they have CAS interactions and can be readily responsible for your compliance with CAS without even really realising it. If you think about your operations team, they may be making payments, sort of reconciling of your asset positions. All of those things are really key to CAS, but those people may not be CAS experts. So having them skilled and trained and aware of CAS in the right way in perspective to their roles is really important. We would advocate that you make sure that your CAS training is at the right standard to make sure that that's all in place. So when an auditor comes in, they look at across your business to get a good understanding of how CAS does apply within the business, the nature of the services and the detail of what you provide as a firm to clients, your terms of business for clients, how you're remunerated, any interest treatment, etc., and the sources and destinations of any CAS or asset inflows and outflows. And then they look to confirm how you are segregating and protecting, providing that overarching protection for CAS while you're responsible for those client money and client assets holdings. And if you have third parties involved, that the role of those third parties is very clear. And you also have the right governance and control over those to still remain confident that even where someone else is active in undertaking some administrative type duties, that you are still fully responsible for your CAS compliance and you know that they're performing in the right way to enable that as well. So the auditor will make a detailed assessment of your firm's business, the processes and controls, and they'll look to you to show them those records, your CAS reporting, reconciliations, and how you are sort of managing your ongoing oversight and governance of the CAS environment. That includes where things do unfortunately go wrong, your ability to identify issues, breach management and logging and evidence associated to breaches, both identifying them, but also importantly rectifying them and strengthening to make sure that that doesn't happen on an ongoing or a repeat basis. The auditor will want to look at any waivers that you have in place. So if you've disapplied rules or you're looking for anything in particular to be sort of disapplied within your environment, they will look to you to discuss that with them and make that clear so that they can make an assessment of how strong and how resilient and robust your CAS environment is. So demonstrating your CAS arrangement and environments can be quite a daunting task as well. There are certain things that have become best practice within the industry. So a CAS controls matrix is a key artifact for you to be able to bring to the auditor to give them an overview of things happening in practice. And also demonstration of how CAS works from end to end. So as we said, most of in many firms, the CAS touch points are embedded across the organisation and not in a CAS operations team, or, you know, a very specific CAS team. That creates risk. So the auditor will want to look at how that's all working in practice. And really, for you, making sure all of those CAS obligations are clear and they can assess that is really key to having a straightforward audit process, and removing some of the time and complexity with auditors having to search around and find things within the organisation. Governance and awareness of issues, and how healthy your CAS environment is really key in an audit. So they will want to look at your CAS structure, your committees, and approval of key CAS decisions. They will look at your CAS training and development and make an assessment of your capabilities in that regard. And they will deep dive into some of your CAS documentation. So making sure everything is up to date and accurate is really key. Get yourself prepared and on the front foot for the audit by going through that and making sure your policies are up to date, the version controls are on, the dates are there, procedures are in the right place, and you've got all the right dates. The records within the procedures are clear and evident for them to look at. And also look at things where things change within the organisation. So change management, really key area. And this is where we do see things from time to time falling down, because things started in the right place, but then through change and through involvement of the business, that kind of adjusted. So just make sure you've had a look at that and get that all in the right place for the auditor to have a look at. Where you have incidents, log them. Make sure you've aligned the right CAS rules to them. So make sure you do get one of your CAS experts to have a look at that, and assess how objectively you could have resolved that, if that's strengthening something, changing something. Make it happen so that you've closed that down, and then you can evidence to the auditor you found it, your control work to find it, but you've since strengthened as well, so that even if they do report that as a finding in your audit report, there's a positive story to that, to say that you it was firm identified and you've actually done something which is resolving the issue and hopefully should stop that happening again. CAS footprint and the documentation of that is a key thing to show. Really helps the auditors to sort of orientate themselves around your business and understand it. So they'll look to your CAS policy, which is mandatory, but sometimes policy is not sufficient to be able to show them the meat, if you like, of how things happen. So where we've seen some really good things from firms across the industry is where they've also put in alongside that a CAS manual, sometimes called CAS configuration, which takes people down into all of the detail beneath that. So where to find procedures, where your reconciliations lie, what type of reconciliations you're doing, how frequent they occur, any key CAS exceptions or decisions, all of that in one place. So it's a one-stop shop for your auditor to take and really help them to navigate your CAS environment. Within that, if you can set out some clear CAS ownership and responsibilities, terms of reference for your committees, etc., or links in the document to where they lie, those are really helpful as well. It just makes the audit more streamlined, sort of seamless, and it should speed the process through so that you ultimately at the end of the audit have a sort of less complex approach to the audit, and hopefully that's reflected in the clarity of which you get the outcome, costs maybe as well. So well worth doing. If you don't you don't have to have a CAS manual in place, but it's useful. If you don't have that in place and you want some ideas around structure, etc., certainly something we've helped a lot of firms to put in place. So please do reach out if you need any information on that. Rules applicability is really key. So we said earlier that the CAS control matrix has become best practice. It's almost expected, although it's not mandated in the rules. It's almost one of the first things that the auditors will start to look at. This shows how you've looked across the CAS chapters and all of the associated rules and groups of rules, and made an assessment of how they apply to your business with the rationale shown. It can be done in many different ways. So smaller firms, we see doing this in, you know, an Excel type format. There are some really smart GRC platforms out there that will help you to do this in a more automated way. And we see everything in between. So there's all sorts of things within that. But the key is do it and make sure you refresh it. So again, business change, rule changes, industry changes, all these things can affect CAS. Make sure you've regularly sort of looked at that and reassessed it, and you can show version control on it to show how up to date that is as well. The auditors will want to look at that, and they'll look at not only where you've applied rules, but also where you don't or you disapply any rules as well. So make sure that's all accurate and readily available for them to look at. So what's I think is really useful is from that rules mapping is that you overlay your CAS risk assessment. So we do get a lot of questions on what constitutes a CAS risk assessment. It's really looking at it with a CAS lens, not to sort of talk in any buzzwords, etc. But consider the CAS risk. So you're responsible for looking after client money and assets for your customers. So the worst case is that you go insolvent, lose the assets, can't account for them, the records are wrong, etc. So consider all these worst case scenarios, the CAS risk of events that could happen that would cause you risk or risk of harm to the underlying customer ultimately, and document that in a risk assessment. That shows with the CAS lens how you've considered those CAS risks, and then align those to the CAS rules and to the CAS chapters that they really apply to. It gives you that linking and hierarchy of rules to risks to start with. And from there, you can then start to look at how you mitigate those with controls and processes that actually align to reduce the inherent risk that you found. And mapping through from rules to risks down into mitigating control and processes is really useful to show that CAS environment in practice. So have that in whatever way you think works best for you. If that's a series of sort of Excel sheets, fine. Beware that they can quickly become out of date. So, you know, you need to have a commitment to making sure that's all accurate and refreshed in the right way. Or look at some of the GRC solutions that are out there to enable you to do that. This gives you a really good evidence provision of your CAS environment. And it also gives you the ability to demonstrate, particularly if you've got a GRC automated solution, the controls operating, because in these places you can show attestations for controls, evidence against those controls, and you've got it all in the one location for the auditors who, you know, can literally go in and self-serve on this, so they can find the relevant MI and sort of evidence around those controls operating to show in practice on the day that it was supposed to happen what actually did happen. Really, really valuable stuff in an audit. The CAS MI, you need to also interrogate that. So it's not enough just to have CAS MI, but you need to do something with it. So it needs to have indicators in there so that you can recognize any repeat occurrences, any trends, root cause analysis, etc., and apply an insolvency mindset to that. So step back and think about worst thing that could happen. What would happen if this materialized, and how would we see that across this MI? Do we need to put in place any indicators to give us that early warning sign or some sort of trigger to give you the ability to recognize issues as they start to materialize? Things do go wrong. Unfortunately, none of this is a perfect science. Even in highly automated and really mature firms where this has been established for a number of years, there are always exceptional processes. We're dealing with third parties. We're not always in full control of this, so things will go wrong. Nobody, whilst CAS, I guess, is a zero tolerance environment, nobody expects you to be perfect 100% of the time. I think the expectation here is that you identify these problems as they arise, log them and deal with them. So effectively look at how you can stop things from happening again and resolve the issue so that the customer is actually fully protected from a CAS perspective in the right way. Make sure you can evidence how you acted. You've logged the incident quickly, you've analysed it and resolved it rapidly. So long-standing breaches and incidents are always called out in the auditor's reports and not looked upon favourably once they, you know, the regulator see them. And depending on the impacts of that, how many customers affected, etc., or the potential impacts, even if something was rectified quickly, those things can be very easily cited within the audit reports. So just, you know, make sure you've got a really tight control over incidents and breaches, and that CAS lens again, looking at those to make sure you're in the right place. So to give you an idea of what we see as audit themes, so obviously desensitized, so there's no client names, etc., in this, but we work with a number of clients across their audit areas, getting them ready for audit, but also helping them once the audits have materialized and they've got their findings and need to make their management points against those. And as established as CAS is at this point in time, I think the last major change is probably 2014 in this area. So we're quite some way into CAS now. We still see some recurring themes and sometimes quite basic things. So, for example, in your acknowledgement letters, it's still quite common for auditors to find issues with the letters, square brackets left in, typographical errors, missing contact details, name and addresses not quite right, the naming conventions, all sorts of things in that. And it's not that I think firms haven't got them in place, but it's that they've probably not done a proofread or deep dive into that to make sure the letter is fully compliant to where it should be. So it's a bit of an easy win, I think, in terms of an audit point. So just have a look at your acknowledgement letters and make sure they are fully where they should be in terms of their content, etc. CAS reconciliations, recurring theme, auditors will sample test. They'll ask you for a number of dates, periods, etc., for you to provide them the evidence that your reconciliations were happening in the right way. We still see a number of places where the data and the evidence isn't available. So if you can't evidence it, the auditor will make the assumption that it didn't happen, as harsh as that may be. So you need to have that evidence. So have some way within your organisation to strengthen the control of making sure the evidence is put in the right place and you can account for it at all times, because you don't know what dates they're going to choose. So you need to make sure on a daily basis you've got all this in the right place. And then obviously there can be issues within the reconciliation, so particularly where you've automated or you've applied macros, etc., across the top of data, that can change and or be challenging to actually demonstrate what you're doing. So we do still see that there are findings around the content and the treatment of data within the reconciliation, so beware of that and just refresh your understanding of how all of that is put together, and again make sure that's as strong as it can be. Total capture is an interesting one. So automation is actually a challenge to this. It's making sure where you can't see what the code is doing, that actually you've got the right data that's feeding into all of your reconciliations and other reporting. Without feeding everything in, then the answer that you come out with will never be accurate. So the challenge is, how do you ensure that you've got total capture of all data that you should have within the data you're using for these purposes? And that's really challenging when it's a highly automated environment, when it's code. So auditors are not necessarily sort of IT literate in all cases. So being able to describe the code and have that in a way that they can understand it and see the output from it and test for that is a really useful thing to be able to do. So making that as clear as possible. I might be slightly disingenuous. There are auditors out there who are IT literate, of course, and would be able to do this, but we do see that there are challenges around providing the insight into the totality of the data that you're using. And then change management, again, you can get it all right day one, but then day two things change. You need to make sure you've evolved that back into the CAS environment as well. So where we see firms doing this well is that as part of the change process, they have a regulatory sign-off and a specific CAS regulatory sign-off for anywhere that it's touched the CAS environment. So being able to recognise where it touches the CAS environment is really critical. And again, if you've mapped out your controls and you've identified things as CAS touch points, that becomes slightly easier to do. And that's a good place to be. So have a look at how you can identify CAS touch points and how you dovetail that into your change management. Controls and governance, the auditors will test the design of your controls. So how effective would they have been if they operated as planned? And then also the performance of the controls. So how did they operate? Did they fail, even though you thought it was a strong control? Have you had something in the period that's happened? So they'll make an assessment over the completeness of your control environment, but also the design and the performance of the control environment as well. And then how well equipped you are to govern that. So escalation routes, triggers, identification, how you look across that, who does it, independence, you know, can you challenge what's out there? And they'll make an assessment across all of that as well. They will quite rightly sort of look at your mandatory policies and your resolution pack and CMARs, etc., and they'll look through all of that to make sure that's all accurate and valid and that everything is aligned. So we do see that there are sometimes some misalignment between things that may be in the customer terms or terms of business with what's in policies and what's in processes. Be aware of that. So things like interest treatment, if you tell customers that you're going to pay them interest, make sure your processes are aligned to paying that interest, or conversely, no interest, make sure that's all put together in the right way and the auditors can see how that's all aligned. There are findings around that on a regular basis. Due diligence of CAS third parties is often comes up in audit. So did you do the right things when you originally took these third parties on to be able to assess them as competent to and fit and proper to do the role that they're doing? And then have you done that on an ongoing basis to make sure that stays where it should be? And does it align to your policies around how you sort of deal with and take on third parties? And does it align to the CAS rules? So there are some very specific things in the CAS rules that are expected. All of that you need to shake up and have a look at and make sure you've got all the evidence available to do that, because those do come up in audits on a regular basis. And then record keeping, make sure you've got all the data there that you need, and make sure that you've got the ability to spot where things are missing. So if someone completes a reconciliation one day and doesn't drop the evidence in, make sure you can see that. Look at the outliers is probably the best advice we can give here. Mainstream CAS processes are generally well embedded across firms, but exceptional processes seem to be always the ones that create the headaches in the audit spectrum. So just have a look at the things that don't happen on a regular basis or can happen occasionally or are changeable, and make sure that the CAS spectrum all the way across you've reviewed to ensure that it all still holds up even where these exceptional processes arise. Some housekeeping for you, I would say test and retest and reassess your operating model. So be able to articulate where CAS starts, understand how it cascades across your organisation and map out all those touch points. Make sure the people who are responsible for conducting the activities under those also know and are aware of what they control and their obligations to help the firm remain compliant. And just keep reinforcing this. So not once, keep doing it on a regular basis, as regular as possible. Have your compliance teams with monitoring programs that rotate across the CAS landscape to make sure you're covering everything and you're making your own findings and addressing those. And just completely address findings as they arise. Don't leave them out there. Straddling audit periods is quite challenging and can get really difficult. And just be aware that when you've looked at the applicability of CAS, you've had someone with a bit of CAS knowledge and expertise to help you to make sure that's in the right place and go across the journey of the CAS spectrum to make sure that that's still in place right the way through. Review things like status changes and timings and journals and ad hoc things that can happen to make sure that doesn't affect any of your protection from a CAS perspective. Customer, like consumer duty, must be at the heart of all of this. So you need to look at this from the customer's perspective and not just from the firm's perspective. And there can be conflicts in this, particularly in the CAS arena. So be aware of that. Make sure you've got that applicability in the end-to-end journeys really tight. And then from a audit findings perspective, just make sure you close out findings. So don't let them straddle audit periods because they get, you know, incrementally more challenging. And that audit report is obviously going into the regulator that's giving them a barometer of how well you're doing from a CAS perspective. So if they see you not closing out CAS findings in the right way, that can get challenging very quickly. So close them out in the period, make sure you can evidence that you've closed them out. And then hopefully you will get, even if where you have had findings, you'll get an audit report on the second cycle that is taking you in a positive and you know, generally a better direction. And an improving audit, even though it may not be a clean audit, is generally looked upon quite favourably as well. So just bear that in mind. For CAS awareness and culture, so culture is quite a difficult thing to establish, but the auditor will make an assessment of your firm's effectiveness. And it's important, I think, that you don't create a blame culture, particularly in the CAS arena, where things can go wrong. And it's, you know, sometimes some quite small things create some larger impacts. But really try to create this positive, open CAS culture where the teams will come and raise their hand, even if the things that they're raising are already dealt with or thought of or established. It's always good to encourage the teams to talk about CAS points and to question things and just challenge things and, you know, make sure that you're working together as a team to improve your CAS awareness and culture. Assess your capabilities quite objectively across your business and make sure you're really clear that your employees have got those skills for them to be able to recognise CAS impacts and keep challenging, not challenging in a negative way, but, you know, just keep asking the right questions. What if this happened, how would we deal with? Could something else come in and affect the way we would deal with that? Just, you know, constantly in a positive way, reinforcing the CAS environment and working with the teams to make sure you've got that as robust as possible is a good way to start to deal with this and encourage that culture. Deliver some really high quality CAS training and a variety of mediums. So not just your online refresher training, slide packs that people have to pass a 8-10 question quiz at the end. Not knocking those, they're useful for refresher, but, you know, have some classroom led stuff as well where they can ask questions, interact, you know, not feel that they're pressure under their work day to get things done and do things on the side of a desk. They have the time to actually walk through and consider and talk about CAS in an open environment, and send them where you can out to industry events or webinars or things like this where they can interact. You know, there are a number of things that are free or very sort of low cost for you to do. And it's always a good way for them to hear from the industry and from other perspectives as well, and just interact with the CAS community, which I think is always a good thing for developing CAS culture as well. Encourage them to be confident. Don't make them worry about CAS, but make it center of what they're doing in terms of their role so that they're aware of it. And when things go well, reward it. So create things for the employees where you can recognise CAS achievements. If they identified something and you resolved something as a result of something that they did, make sure that's celebrated. And, you know, encourage this CAS awareness and CAS champions approach across the business. And that, again, helps with culture. So if they see that this is a really positive thing, they're being recognised for what they do, that can really help you to develop that CAS culture. Training is the key enabler to your CAS awareness and your CAS culture. We've seen some really good progress and results with firms that we've been working with and for across the industry in undertaking CAS maturity assessments. So we have a maturity scale that we can help to apply to your business to show you where you currently sit. So a health check of where you currently are and how mature you are from a CAS perspective, and then incrementally how you would get to what good looks like in the CAS world and CAS best practice. And we can map out with you how to get you into that place. But you, of course, you don't need to do it with us. You can do it yourself if you've got your own maturity assessment model to use or develop one. But really review that in CAS environment and all of your governance and activities, documentation, training, etc., and make sure you fully understand where you are now, starting point, and map out where you want to get to so that you can show your CAS maturity and share that with your auditors. They'll always be keen to see how seriously you take CAS and what you're doing within the organisation to promote and enhance your CAS capabilities, ultimately providing the good customer outcomes that you need to as part of CAS compliance. So I'm going to stop there for now. Hopefully that's given you a little bit of insight into the CAS audit prep and things that you can do, and hopefully practical examples that you can work with. And we've had a number of questions come through already, which we will look to give some answers to and share now anonymously. And we will take any others that come through. And as Niamh said at the beginning, if we can't get to them in this session, I will follow up with all of them and I will reach out to you individually as well. So I'm going to hand back now so that we can go to the Q&A session. And thank you very much for listening to me. And I look forward to speaking to some of you in the future.
Thank you, Joy, for that presentation. That was great. We have a couple of questions that came through live. I'm just going to ask you this first one, if you're ready.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so if we relinquish our CAS permissions, what is involved in the final audit?
That's a good question. So we do a lot of work with firms around CAS permissions, variations, removals, and brand new ones as well. So it's a space where we've had quite a lot of interaction with clients. It's a difficult one to answer. Unfortunately, it really always depends on specific circumstances and arrangements and the sort of end target state. But if I try to generalise, just to give you a sense of that, firstly, obviously, you need to interact with the regulator. So you're going to need to notify them. That's going to depend on the firm. So you may have a supervisor who you see on a regular basis. You may have to email them if you don't have people coming out to you to discuss this with, or you can do a sort of SUP 15 notification to them. So you need to tell them what you're about to try to do. And you need to make sure that you've ceased all of those CAS activities and also appropriately discharged the CAS assets and monies to the customer or to the end location, if that's some sort of transfer of business, etc. So all of that needs to happen. And then you need your CAS auditor to also confirm that that is the case, so they can give the regulator the confidence that not only have you stopped with the CAS activity, but you've appropriately dealt with everything as well. And it's all gone back to the customers directly or to somewhere else who is then providing that CAS protection for them. So it is not a simple process. You are going to need professional advice around that, and you're also going to need your auditors engaged as well. Best thing I can say to you is, obviously I don't know your circumstances directly. Reach out to me afterwards and we can start to talk about that if you need us to assist you in any way with that.
Perfect, thank you. So the next question is, is there any guidance regarding what is expected for a CAS risk assessment?
There's no formal guidance out there, but it's something that's been developed across the industry over a number of years. So it's really about, I spoke earlier about applying the CAS lens. So having an idea of what CAS risk is and how that materialises and the sort of impacts and what can happen from a customer perspective. So you're required to have adequate organisational arrangements and minimise the risk of client assets deficit or issues arising. And those arrangements should first consider how the risk of detriment or deficit can be avoided. And then once you've assessed that risk, then you can start to put in place things to mitigate that. You obviously need to have a CAS risk environment, so you need to have documented a risk appetite and specifically think about CAS within that and approve all of these CAS risk aspects through your CAS officer, your PRZ and your CAS committee. So there's not one sort of source of information for what is a CAS risk assessment. There's no templates out there on the market that I'm aware of that you can just go and grab. But there are certainly some best practice methods that we can help you to deploy. The best place for you to start is, again, start at that legal entity level and assess CAS risk from that level one risk area down. Look through your products, services and solutions, anything that falls into the CAS regime, and think about the worst things that can happen or the everyday risks that can happen, operational risk. Go through that spectrum of risks and map that out. And you'll quite quickly sort of bring together a CAS risk assessment. It's really about thinking what could go wrong within what you're doing now from a CAS perspective, and how can you then prevent that from materializing or mitigate that as far as possible. Happy to help you again with that if you need some advice around that. It's an area we've done a lot of work within, and we can certainly help you to structure your CAS risk assessment.
That's good, thank you. The next question is on CAS training. So we are a small firm. Do we really need to offer so much CAS training?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? It's always a really useful tool to have in place, CAS training, but it does need to be in perspective with the firm itself. You know, I think it shows how seriously you take CAS and how seriously you've cascaded that through your employees. But it should always be tailored to the firm. And we know, because we work with a number of different sizes of firms as well, that can be deployed quite differently for different firms. From my point of view, I'd say it's always advisable to offer classroom type sessions. So it doesn't have to be sitting in a room. We can do this over webinar and sort of Teams type sessions now. But it's always good to have an interactive session because your employees have the platform then to be able to question and interact with someone that can give them some guidance real time. But we recognise that firms, that, you know, sizes of firms, that matters, and obviously it's different in different firms. To at least have some key CAS champions across the business who are really trained and can support the development of others across the employees, that's useful and not always high cost solutions. So we develop training for firms to suit their budgets and deliver in a number of different ways and try to rationalise and lower the costs of that. But I think in essence, you do need to offer CAS training, not just the online training, but also some interactive training to have a really effective training platform. So have a think about that and please do reach out and I'll share with you what we can do around some lower cost solutions.
Perfect. So the next question is, we have an audit report with findings that are really harsh. What can we do?
Yeah, so I know how this feels. We're practitioners, I guess, is the first thing to say. So myself included and a number of our senior guys and girls across the organisation have come out from industry. So we're used to sitting on both sides of the fence here. We know exactly what you mean when you feel that audits are harsh, but you know, auditors have to follow the criteria in the FRC standards to have a consistency across this. And it's, you know, they have to make sure they make the findings in line with that. So they have a really challenging job to do as well. They're not doing this just to be unreasonable, but you know, often they do find things that feel slightly harsh in perspective when you look at what that is within the firm itself. So we We've worked with a number of firms across that as well to help them to respond to their management points that are within the audits in the best way possible. So accepting that these issues are there, were there, you know, legitimate findings, we will help firms to respond to those and also to put practices in place to actually address them. And we also work with the auditors as well, just to make sure the understanding and the comprehension of what they found is validated. And also, if there are any mitigating things that we can help to bring to the table around that, we will. So we work almost as an intermediate between the two areas to try and get the best outcome for firms and for the industry as a whole. But yes, it can, you know, sometimes these things are intrusive and can feel quite harsh. And I think the best thing to do is to just be objective, understand where that's come from, and try to accept and put in place something that stops that from being a repeat occurrence.
Perfect, thank you. We probably have time for two more questions. So this question is, you mentioned automating the CAS control mapping. Isn't that expensive for firms?
So it can be expensive. It depends on the solution. And we've had a lot of success with particularly smaller and mid-sized firms where we've been able to, we work with a partner who has a SaaS-based solution in the GRC space that is flexible and sort of cost effective for firms to be able to deploy. So it doesn't need to always be expensive, but it can be really highly effective. And that needs to be balanced within the firm with a sort of offset of the operational risk of having a manual solution and the inefficiencies within that process as well. So, you know, there are hidden costs with having something highly manual and risks as well that materialize. So weigh that up, I guess. But there are solutions out there that are really useful and flexible for firms, particularly small and mid-sized firms, to access and use. And if you want some more information around those areas, I'm really happy to help you. So please reach out to me after this and we can have a chat around introducing you to some of those providers that may be more cost effective for you as a smaller firm.
Thank you, Julie. And then the final question that we have time for is, where do we start? The CAS rules are extensive and we have a small team. Can you help us to get a CAS structure in place?
They are extensive, you're right. There's a lot within the CAS rules and it takes some expertise for you to be able to manage that. Starting out, I think the benefit of working with us as practitioners means that we've worked directly within your compliance teams, risk and operational roles. We work with a number of regulated firms and we've got a well-defined sort of CAS baseline that we can help you to deploy. So CAS mapping that we spoke about earlier, we can help you to get that in either an automated or a manual fashion. We've done it many times. We have a standard suite of CAS policies and documentation that can help you, sort of master CAS resolution packs, etc. And we can get that deployed to you in a fairly rapid way. I think the offset to this is because these things need to be bespoke for your organization, there will always be an element of us working with your teams to define your controls and your processes, because those sort of things are always going to be dependent on your specific technology, the way you operate services, etc., and the models that you've deployed. So we have to tailor those based on what the way you work. But we're really used to doing this. And I think the benefit of us having worked as practitioners in the functions is that we can do this rapidly and help you to commence and mature and give you a sort of roadmap for how to get to what good looks like in the CAS spectrum really quickly. And interestingly, we do things for smaller and mid-tier clients that really resonate with them, like give them access to our teams on an hourly basis via retainer solutions. So we can help structure something commercially that works for you. And we work with our clients in many different ways to make sure it's the most optimal for them to use.
Perfect. Thank you, Julie. Well, that is all we have time for this session. Thank you so much, Julie. That was a great presentation and very informative. I would just like to say thank you, everyone, for attending the webinar. Just a reminder, that the session is recorded and will be sent out by email and will be on our website in the next couple of days. And any questions that were not answered in the Q&A session will be followed up early next week by Julie herself. So just want to say thank you again, and thank you to Julie. Thank you very much, Julie.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.